What up?
What up?
What up?
Yo.
Yo. What's
what
going
they do?
On?
Yeah.
My boys. How is it? How,
man, it's
how, are,
the hood,
how
man.
Are you doing?
My boy tried to snatch my purse. But, you know, I got him. You know what I'm saying? I had him
on
business.
I can't tell if you're serious or not because I know where you live.
Oh, I got some stories I can tell.
I thought you were going to say because I know you have a purse.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm less sure about that than I am that sometimes you can't tell if Matt's kidding or not.
Oh, that's something. That's a trait of you right there.
Anyway, hi everybody. Welcome to the TOVG podcast.
To give you a hint of my hood, a dog got shot and died on my lawn.
Good.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Great.
That's horrible. What did you do?
There were shootings the night before, and I was like, oh, those are fireworks, babe. Don't worry about that. Go back to sleep.
Wow.
And then I woke up. We put on some clothes, get ready to go to church, and then we see the dog just laying there peacefully, like he's sleeping. And it took us a while, but we noticed that his eyes was open and he was dead. I had to go over to my neighbor, which we never talk. You know that relationship with a neighbor where you're like, we exist in the same area, but we just don't acknowledge each other. Yeah, that type of thing. And, you know, I knocked on the door. I'm like, I think your dog died on my lawn. And, yeah, that was an interesting conversation. There was shooting last night at the Afool, and we all ran inside, and we thought the dog ran away, but I guess he didn't.
Did you know the dog? Did you know it was your neighbor's dog?
Yeah, because the dog, it likes to take poops in my yard. Likes to bark at everybody. Okay, so
I guess he just finally pushed someone too far.
Pushed someone too far. I'm not saying that he deserved it. I'm not saying that. You know, it's a dog. But yeah,
it's funny. Not that, but it's funny because this week I came prepared because I've been listening to a lot of other podcasts, and I totally came prepared to open up the show right after you said hello and welcome by being like, yeah, welcome to the TOVG podcast, the only podcast that doesn't claim to talk about video games sometimes, but actually just does talk about video games. And then we opened up with the dead dog on Matt's lawn. So
perfect.
Don't get me wrong. I didn't see it coming either.
Right.
Yeah. I just wanted to branch out the intro a bit, and instead of saying hello and welcome, just say hey. And little did I know the places it would go.
It's fine. Yeah. It's fine. We could bring it back up. Video games, guys. This is what we escape to, right?
Right.
Forget about our crappy lives, right?
Let's do that. Let's engage in escapism. And pretend that video games are the only things that are important and worth caring about, which is not even that hard for me to do. I don't even watch movies.
Yeah, I hardly watch almost anything. I don't watch anything aside from like YouTube videos and like one TV show.
I'm like the only guy. I'm a weird guy. I watch a lot of TV and
you're the only normal one.
I just can't do it, man. Like some stuff I get invested into, like the obvious, like, you know, Breaking Bad or whatever, the good shows. I feel like if I'm just sitting and watching something for very long, I just feel like I've wasted so much time. Like if I'm video gaming, at least I feel like I was part of the experience, but
so
I don't know.
No Rick and Morty, no Castle,
nope.
No Arrow, no Flash,
no
Breaking Bad.
Well, I did watch that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But like even then, when four seasons were all on Netflix, I was the ball and chain that held my wife back from watching it all in one day, and we watched one episode a day.
Oh, that's because discipline. I watch Rick and Morty, but it's always in five episode bursts every 5 weeks.
I can't do that. I have to watch like one episode and be like, all right, I got to go like actively do a thing now.
My life just started going downhill as soon is I started playing these big sandbox games, and now I just I just don't care. I'll spend an entire day in the bed if I can get at least a little bit of work done in there.
Man, I feel bad for you because, like, over the past couple weeks, I'm, like, playing, like, a little bit of Mario Maker, playing a little bit of Splatoon. Pretty, like, hands-off games that you kind of, like, you like, play them and you just, that was fun. I got my fill. And then you did a full Witcher series spanning multi-episode review followed by Metal Gear Solid 5 followed by a, like, full Mario Maker review, which is coming sometime.
Well, it's not a full review, actually, but, I mean, we'll find out tomorrow. I hope I can get it
today,
done in time.
Actually.
Yeah, because most people. I always have, like, trouble with the time travel we do in this podcast, but...
Possibly yesterday, if you're a little late, or just finding it on the website, because this goes up on Saturday on the website.
I do want to say, it's been 2 weeks, my Wii U gamepad came back from repair. One of the first things I did was plop in Splatoon, and oh man, it's so good.
Right?
The motion controls in Splatoon are super legit.
What? Right. What? So maybe I need to send mine in because for me, it sucks. Like, I hate it.
Really?
What's your issue?
The controls, not the game. The game is cool, but the controls make me hate it.
Interesting.
The motion controls.
Just the controls.
Or the regular controls.
Both of them. Both of them sucks.
I don't know about that. Like, I think it just controls wonderfully. I think it's just like a very easy to like, it's just like a very like, what's the word? Heptic? Is that the word? Haptic?
Yeah.
Like it has good feedback. It has good game feel to use that
just want a game,
2013 word.
I just want a regular 360 controller, plug it in with high sensitivity and I'll be beast mode.
You could
to do some stupid stuff. No, it doesn't work properly. Like the Y axis is sensitive. Wait a minute. So you guys have to reset camera every fight and you're okay with that? Or you guys don't have to reset the camera with motion controls?
I'm resetting the camera like every 5 or 6 seconds.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. When you turn on motion controls, you can't use the analog stick for Y axis. You use motion controls for Y axis and for X axis as well. But it's kind of like a fine tune. Like what I noticed, I was totally fine with the game, even without the motion controls. I was playing it and having a blast. But last night, or actually 2 nights ago when I popped it in, I played one of the single player levels, which was basically a shooting gallery. And I was basically like snapshotting these targets. Like it mm-hmm. was like the closest I've felt to having a mouse on a console.
It really like when you are playing Splatoon with the motion controls and you're doing good, you look like how you would look if you were playing, you know, like Mario Kart 64 as a kid and you're like swinging the controller around and stuff to like turn, but it's actually like actually doing something.
You look like a person in a movie playing video games. and the reason why the motions are so exaggerated is because the motion controls are only there for fine tuning. Like you aim in the general ballpark of the enemy with the stick and then go the rest of the distance with the motion controls, which I think actually gives you a finer degree of accuracy.
I agree.
Versus playing with a stick, you're using something, you're using a much more natural, controllable motion of your own arm.
Yeah. When I come over, I'm going to try your controller out because I'm convinced that my gamepad is broken. And
maybe it's just not for
properly.
You. I don't know.
No, but I like the game. The game, it makes me feel like I'm playing Gears of War and like a nice, like, you know, the pyro animation from Valve for TF2. Like, you know, when he sees rainbows and bunnies and stuff, but really he's burning the house down. That's kind of what Splatoon is. It's just really, it just feels good to shoot people in that and spread your nice milk everywhere. Yeah. You know, it's really cool. But I the controls, I can't get back.
You turn motion controls, you can spread your goo with your own arms. And that feels more natural and familiar, I'm sure.
Yes. Yes, it does.
See, we could talk about video games.
Don't leave the silence.
I'm sorry. Well, okay, so I'm going to move out of that.
sticky situation.
Yeah, well, I guess we can call it that if you want to. I have been playing over the past, I guess, week and a half now. You guys might have seen my video, or at least me tweeting profusely about it, but Rivals of Aether, or Aether, yeah. I guess, as I was corrected several times in my video's comments. But it has an A in it, so fucking Aether, all right? Sounds cooler.
The Smash Brothers thing, right? Did you,
yeah, yeah.
I wonder what the devs have to say.
I'm sure it's actually Aether, but it has an A in it. The A is capitalized, Aether. But yeah, like, that game, that is a fucking game right there. That is a good-ass game.
I need to try it out. I've been looking at it, and I watched your video, and I was like, man, I should probably try this out.
Like, if you have any sense of, like, if you have any sort of competitive spirit when you play those kind of games, like, if you play Smash Brothers and you start getting into it, like... Rivals is fucking good because, as I said in my video, which you should all go watch, by the way, it's like really easy to pick it up and figure out how to do things. And so, like, you start to feel out the combos that work because you don't have to, like, it's not like Street Fighter where some of the best combos involve like a fucked up FADC in the middle of them at the right frame and shit. Yeah. Like, I'm all for watching people do that. It's very cool, but I also would like to play a game and do stuff that's very impressive and very fun and flashy. And like Aether just like allows you to do that. Like I regularly play online, and when I'm not getting bad connection with people from like Europe, I hold my own really well. Very rarely do I get beaten in a best of three, which is like, I'm like breaking my arm, patting myself on the back, but it's like, it's so easy to like pick this game up and feel it out. And you'd like, the barrier of you getting good is how much you can like discern how your character works against other characters and how to apply it. And I fucking love it. It's so cool.
You can play as a shark tiger. Holy crap.
Well, it's more of a orca cat, but.
Or cat. Yeah.
Or cane, actually.
Oh.
But it's very cool, and that's the other thing that I really like about the game is that every character has this like super central mechanic that sort of like drives every other move that they have. So the character that I play is the I think she's like a raccoon or maybe a weasel. I'm not sure.
A furry, yeah.
anyway, she is her name is Maple, and her core mechanic is that three of her special moves apply a mark. And when the mark is active, her smash attacks will lock you in place for a second. They'll like stun you. And her her up special, her recovery move, becomes a infinite range tether. And so it's very interesting because people have time to react when you tether. So you tether straight to them from wherever you are, and they can like hit you when you get there, or you can hit them. And like that mark just drives all of the combat, because when the mark is not on the opponent, they can play aggressively, but when it is on the opponent, then they have to realize that, oh, you can recover from most things really, really easily. If you land a smash attack, they're going to probably get fucked. Or you can also play, say, like little plant on the ground. And if they have the mark on them and they run by the plant will lasso them and hold them in place for a second. It's fucking great.
You were talking about this at E3, like how a lot of the characters is central mechanics revolve around laying traps. And
they,
how you like
it's
make
sort of like
stage like, hazards.
It like a couple of them are like that. Like I guess half of the roster is based on that, but they all generally have the idea of like, or I guess more than half the roster. But they all have this idea of there are some things that you need to set into motion to get your character like going, and it's very easy to figure out how to do that. But it's a different story for like how to apply it,
which probably adds a whole nother level of satisfaction to pulling something off, because you're going through a long chain of causes and effects.
Oh yeah,
that are super distinct.
I was playing with Todd, Rated S Games Todd, last week, capturing footage, and the beetle character Crag, his special abilities all revolve around like rocks that are not like part of his body. He can like summon up rocks and stuff, and I found a like cheeky little combo because like his neutral B, he picks up a rock to throw. And if he hits that rock after he throws it, like if it's on the ground or something, he hits it, it breaks and shoots off like a shotgun blast in front of it or in the direction that your hitbox is going. And his up special makes a pillar of rock go to wherever, whatever the height he's at. So I managed to get Todd way up in the air, jumped up to him, used the up special. So a pillar appears below me, pulls Todd up to my level. I'm holding a rock. I throw the rock up. It hits Todd. I use an up attack. The up attack hits Todd, also hits the rock. The rock explodes and the rock shotgun hits Todd and shoots him off the top of the map. And it was like in 1 second, it was just like, and he's dead. And it looked so fucking cool. And it felt so fucking good.
Yeah, it was actually really easy to visualize what you were talking about, despite how elaborate it sounds.
Right. And it's also like I have been able to replicate like a very similar combo going in a different direction because it's very easy to like figure out your inputs and when you should be doing them. There's no like tiny ass window to do that. You just like you imagine it and you're like, maybe I can do this. And, you know, if they know what you're going to do, they might be able to like spot dodge out of it or air dodge or whatever. But if they're not expecting it, like that's how you do it. It's fucking great. God, fucking great. Love this game.
I'm glad. I have a feeling that we all have games that we love to talk about because it's been 2 weeks and it's been a good 2 weeks for me. I don't know about you guys, though. Well, I mean, we just heard about Jimmy, though. Jimmy seems like he's been taken care of.
Yeah, definitely.
How about you, Matt?
Oh, man. Oh, well, I guess last week was Soma. This week is Super Mario Maker, which...
Oh, you
Super
got
Mario
it?
Maker is pretty fantastic. Yeah, yeah, I had to.
I'm still making up my mind about it. And I have a feeling I won't really come to fully appreciate it until I unlock everything. But right now it seems kind of skimpy.
You definitely, I would recommend just using one of those guides to unlock everything quick.
Yeah, well, what you do is you spam everything, basically, right?
Yeah, you spam everything and it'll be like, oh, your order will show up tomorrow for your next pack. And then what you do is
you keep putting blocks over and over and over again.
You either do that until you get something, or the quicker way is you just back out to your Wii U's main menu and then go to your system settings and change the date to tomorrow.
And then you go back in and it's like,
oh, it showed up.
Because I tried the spam trick and it only worked once. It did not work the second time.
The spam trick gets a little like
hit or miss.
Yeah, that's why I switched to the time warp trick where you just go in and you like you place all of the new things that you have until it's like, oh, your next order is on its way tomorrow, and then you just back out and change the date. I still haven't changed my Wii U's date back, so I think it thinks that it's like October 18th right now or something.
It's
that's
such a bother.
Too far off. But yeah, it's like a really weird system and I don't think it works.
I get it, but in hindsight, I don't think that it was implemented very well.
For clarification, we should probably explain how, because it's super weird, and people who haven't played probably don't know how weird what we're talking about is.
All right, go for it.
Okay. I mean, I don't mean to like steal your thunder or anything, because you might actually know more about the game than I do at this point, because you've had it weeks longer.
That's true.
But the thing is, you start out with an extremely basic set of level design pieces, and it's only what you see in World 1-1 of Mario 1. It's just a couple pipes that you cannot assign new warp zones to, or how should I explain? You can't assign a sub-level to pipes. You had to unlock
that's like
that
one
later
of the last
on.
Things you get.
Oh, really? Because I want that now. And
yeah,
that's the problem.
I mean, like, you'll get doors, and doors kind of function the same way, and those are, like, pretty quick afterwards. But
they don't look as pretty.
The warp pipe thing is a little bit later.
You get very, very small sets of items every day after filling a 5-minute time quota of building a level, unless you do the spam trick, in which the game kind of assumes you've already played with those pieces so much that you're ready for the next one.
Right.
And I guess the idea is that they want you to like have some idea in your head over the next day and that you're a kid.
From what I see, the idea was more we don't want you, like, okay, I can say that from experience, I think that this is a good idea in theory and maybe not the most elegant execution, but like, you know, okay, for example, me learning music as a kid, like guitar and drums mm-hmm. and shit, I skipped the basics and I went straight to the heavy metal stuff, which was what I was listening to at the time. So I really have no knowledge of good hand placement for chords on a guitar, but I can do a two-handed tapping solo, which is fucking useless if you don't know the basics. So, like, I can't play you a song. I could just play you a tapping solo, which is fucking useless.
Good job.
Yeah, exactly.
So and they don't want that to happen, but at the same time, they like, tether it to real time. Like,
yeah, it's a little too constricting right off the bat. But, like, for example, I did make two levels that were, like, out of the Mario 1-1 pieces because I just kind of wanted to jump in and I was like, I don't care about the limitations. I'll see what I can do with the limitations. And I made some, like, fun stuff. Like, it gives you springs, which can be used for a lot of funny things. And, like, I don't know. I'm a big proponent of the idea that limitations breed creativity. And I think that that's what they were going for. I just don't, like I said, I don't think it was the most elegant way to implement
that. It's super frustrating because I have ideas that I mm-hmm. won't be able to implement until like day 9.
Right.
Especially when you're playing all those other levels.
Yeah, like, and you realize how much better they are than anything you can possibly create because you haven't waited the days. Like the idea, the way you do it intentionally, the way they have designed is that you unlock the game over a period of 9 days. And like we mm-hmm. were talking about earlier, there are tricks to get around it. And there's one that they did put in there, which is the spam trick, which seems like a deliberate part of their design. And the other is just fudging the time and date.
Right.
But it's, I'd much rather just have like a more traditional campaign, but really a tutorial.
Yeah, I actually stuck to their system for, I think, the first 3 days that I owned it. Mm-hmm. Like, I got it on, oh, fuck, maybe it wasn't even 3 days. I think I stuck to it for 2 days.
Because your level, like, I can't make your unlikely companion level myself because I can't stick things together.
You can stick things together, you just can't. You don't have Mario World,
I don't have Mario World yeah. either. I don't have the Haunted House
Mario
backdrop.
Tree.
And that's I also right. don't know how to stick things together. Like this isn't there's not a lot of not a lot of meat to the manual either.
It's one of those things where like when you do like how you think you're going to do something is pretty much like it's almost all the time going to be how it is. Like sticking things together, it's a matter of putting them on like you put one on a block or in a grid space, and then you put the next one right above it, and you'll see them, like, they'll both do, like, a little, like, pop animation that shows that they've linked.
Are you sure? Because what if you want to yep. stick them next to each other but don't want to stick them?
It only works up and down, first of all.
Okay.
As far as, like, not sticking them together like that, I'm pretty sure just move it a block farther away, because in most situations, you won't need stuff that's densely packed on top of each other. Unless they're already like flying enemies, but I find that's like a very specific problem to have. I can't see it messing up too many like contraptions, puzzles, or situations.
Well, it just makes me worried about the longevity of this thing. Like I've enjoyed a lot of puzzle levels, but it's so easy to break them because there yeah. aren't like controls for preventing a lot of stuff players are going to do. Like there's one haunted house I was playing where you had to hit a hidden block that would make or not a hidden block, a music block that would uh-huh. make a vine climb up into the air so you could reach a high point of the level. But if you hit the music block from above, the vine grows
went
down.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I couldn't get to where I needed to go and would just have to restart. And
well, I mean, in that sense, I want to assume that that was a fail state that the creator of that level put in intentionally because they could have just made... They could have just made a regular block instead of a music note, and you wouldn't have been able to hit it from the top.
That's true. But I just feel like I just instinctively feel like if I click and hold down on any one of these pieces, an options menu should pop up with a few boxes to tick that would prevent stuff like that.
I can see that. For the most part, your options menu on things is shaking them around with the control stick until they change to the other thing. Have you done that?
No. And like I said, I'm still really early on it. 80% of my time has been playing levels, not making them. So you're going to have to explain this one to me.
I mean, it's pretty simple. It grab anything, like the easiest way to describe it. Grab a green Koopa from your little menu that you have, drag it onto the level, and then pick it up and shake it, and it'll turn into a red Koopa after a little bit. And it pretty much, I'd say like 90% of the enemies and entities have a alternate state.
But like, how was I supposed to know that?
It tells you in the little startup.
Okay, I guess I missed it.
Did you know you can copy and paste? Because I didn't know, and it took me a while to figure that out.
Yeah,
there's a lot of things.
You like, press a button for that. Like, it's not a gesture. Like, it's at least slightly easier to find.
Right. Yeah. Right. I didn't know. I was, like, looking in the manual. I was like, oh, okay.
The first like, thing that happens when you open up that level editor is it's like, here's your things, here's your worlds. If you shake a thing, it changes, and then like it gets you going. So you could have easily missed it, and because I missed it at first, and then I watched somebody making a level, and they shook a thing, and I was like, oh, well, that's neat.
What I did notice when putting wings on something, it kind of prompts you to shake them, and then you shake the wings off. So I just thought that was a wing removal function, not a toggle different versions of this same object function.
Yeah, there's like a very limited way you interact with things, and they affect it situationally, and you get the hang of it pretty quickly, I'd say. Like, as soon as you know what you're doing, you get the hang of it pretty quickly.
What do you guys think of the $60 price tag for this game? Because once you unlock everything, like, I don't know. Like, I felt like there should have been levels that they made. Just a little story mode. Not necessarily a story mode. Just, here's levels that we made with Mario Maker. Now go make your levels. That type of thing. I wish there was a few of those in there so I felt like I beat the game in a way. Not necessarily that's important, but I felt like there should have been a little bit more. But because the community is just ridiculous in creating these levels, and I've played hundreds of levels since I've got the game, and most of them have been pretty fun. The auto levels, some of them have really good design to them that just make me feel satisfied to figure it out, and lots of little puzzles. A lot of people have some really good ideas. That in itself, I feel like it's worth it, but like, I don't know, from a guy, I'm a guy who loves Super Mario World and loved the Mario games from the very beginning. I grew up with the stuff. Nostalgia is not necessarily affecting my view, but it does have some play into my enjoyment, I would think. Able to play more and more levels. I can play this literally all day. Me and my wife were swapping the controller.
Oh, that sounds really fun, actually.
It's really, really addicting
and
fun.
To swap out every other level or something?
Not to cut you off, but they do have the, like, I'm assuming you've been doing, like, the 100 Mario challenges.
that and the, I don't know what the difference between the 10 Mario and the 100 Mario is.
See, that's what I was going to say. The 10 Mario is developer levels.
Yeah, that's the offline mode.
Oh, so what, every week they reset it or something like that?
No, it's actually, there's a set, I think there's like 80 or so levels that you play through playing the 10 Mario over and over again. And then when you beat the 10 Mario for like the, like when you like exhaust all the levels in their library, you unlock the four levels from the Nintendo World Championships.
I want to play those now.
Yeah, it's that's the thing, is like, that's like super ambiguous. I would have never known that you play the 10 Mario thing like 10 times and then you finally like unlock new levels. And if you beat those levels, you unlock the weird Mario mushroom. Have you seen that?
I've seen it, but I've never been able to play with it in maker mode.
It has like, you have to beat those levels first. Yeah, and he gets like Luigi mechanics from Mario 2, where he like flutters and jumps all like floaty. It's really weird. But yeah, the 10 Mario challenge is essentially the developer levels and stuff.
Well, I'm going to be doing that tonight then, actually.
I don't know. It's still not exactly what I think I wanted out of it. Because I guess what I wanted was another Mario game plus an editor, and what I got was an editor plus super duper light mini levels. Like the Nintendo made ones are so short.
They're mostly, I find they're mostly to show off gimmicks that you can do in the game.
Yeah,
maybe give you ideas by being like.
I get it. It's just like, so lightweight.
Essentially, the whole point is you play the 10 Mario Maker challenge, then all the levels that you beat get unlocked in your preview thing, and then you can go to those levels and open them up in the editor and see how they did certain things, or like play with the entities that they have and like move them to different positions, see how the level plays differently. Like, yeah, I don't know. I do agree it's a bit sparse for $60.
But it's Mario, so.
Well, see, here's the I'm hoping there it's missing very, very blaring and crucial things
like
from the editor.
Even
you like checkpoints.
World
everybody,
maps.
Yeah.
I want
the
world
first
maps.
Thing that everybody says.
Yes.
World maps and checkpoints.
Customs for everything.
Oh, everybody says those.
Music
and
maker.
It's like it's so true because I'm actually scripting a video exactly on this one specific particular topic right now, but I'll say like a little bit of a spiel right now anyway. The way that levels in Mario, in like a real Mario game, are designed is not the way you're going to design them in Mario Maker, because you have no lead-in of other levels. You have no payoff of levels past it. You have to make your concept known, let the player experiment with it, and finish it off in one singular level. And if your level gets too long, people are just going to skip it, and they're never going to finish it. So it's sort of counterintuitive to designing a Mario level, and it's more developing this weird metagame where, like, I feel like my Unlikely Companion level, it like brushes up with the too long notion. Like it barely manages to like get the mechanic and then let you use the mechanic throughout the level and then finish up. Whereas if I had a world map where I can make like maybe a series of four levels, maybe it introduces you to the mechanic really easily in the first level. In the second level, you can see how it works in some very controlled situations. And then levels two and three, or three and four, excuse me, are like ones you actually have to apply it and like use critical thinking.
It would give a sense of checkpointing and progression that isn't there.
Right.
And
right.
When people making levels do that, when they introduce you with the challenge in the beginning of the level and then make it really hard and serious in the end of the level, that means you're dying a whole lot at the end of the level, but have to play through everything in the beginning all over again.
Yeah.
And it gets really repetitive. And this is why I think world maps or checkpoints, but I'd really like to see world
both.
Maps, because then people could make level compilations.
Yes.
Is the most sorely needed feature, but one that might be super hard to implement. Because that's like a whole new set of you would need almost a whole different editor for those
screens. See, here's the thing is, I don't think you would, because I don't necessarily want to make Super Mario World. I don't want to make this large, expansive, like, oh, bridges and there's secret exits and everything. That would be cool, but for this concept to be completely, I guess, like, satisfactory, all I would need is those 100 Mario challenge.
Where there's a straight line through eight levels.
Straight line of eight levels. Because where you are on the map doesn't really affect it. Like, you can do some thematic stuff in there. Of course, it worked great in Super Mario World. But, like, I'd be totally satisfied with just, like, you can choose between
a playlist,
you know,
even.
Yeah, essentially a playlist or a folder of levels, like
stuff entering codes and stuff like that. And,
you could share, like, oh, here's my world, and you can let people just play it in, you know, in succession, and then they could rate it like, oh, I like this world a lot,
imagine,
or I beat the whole thing, or I didn't beat any of it, you know?
Imagine how much more satisfying it would be to put in that stupid code and then not get a 2-minute level and be done with it, but rather put in one code, play for an entire hour of something cool and unique, and then put the game down and be satisfied for the sitting.
Yeah. And then if you want to go even farther, the other thing that I was going to mention in my video, that I don't know if this is like probably the least realistic, but I think it would be super duper helpful, is just fucking put a tagging system.
Oh,
on the
yes.
level.
Why?
You wouldn't have it. You wouldn't have it user made tags, because then people are going to start tagging levels as fuck and penis or whatever. But like, just put like 10 pre-made tags. Like, this is a level, this is puzzle, this is
Kaizo,
difficult,
automatic,
yeah,
Japanese.
Automatic. But like, you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
So users who finish the level or just play it can be like, I like your level, and then they can tag it as puzzle and difficult. Yeah. So that people who can search through puzzle levels and difficult levels will find it, like, very simple.
Like,
and
Dark
make
Souls,
it,
like how you leave messages in Dark Souls. You have a set of right.
I really
stuff.
Like the comments. You can leave Dark Souls messages in these levels. It's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I had to turn those off because I kept dying.
Some of the levels
they, yeah,
need
they
them.
Get, they kind of get way the fuck in the way.
Yeah. They do, yeah. But I really, really like levels that really think outside the box. And one of them that I played another night that was made by a fan was a survival horror one where you walk in a room and hear a telephone ringing off screen and then read the comment and it says a phone or they'll pretend to be signs on the wall. Uh-huh. There's one, Aperture Science Portal themed one where the comments are GLaDOS mocking you and also giving you hints for the puzzles.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, like I literally like the idea of using those comments as basically a stand-in for signs or dialogue.
Right. My favorite one that I've seen so far, I was watching Cosmo Wright do 100 Mario challenges the other night, and he started a level, and it was like a water level, and there was a block in front of him, like, you know, like a question mark block, and the comment just pointed to it, and it just said, here is a flower, comma, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, maybe they could also... I don't really know if Nintendo anticipated people using them as signs. It would be hard to imagine them not doing that, though. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, maybe there should be more options in the options menu, such as filter comments by creator only.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's... It just feels like... I can't really say half-baked, more like 75% baked.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing. I expect them, what with Splatoon, to be
DLC.
Adding yeah. to this game for free. But if they charge for it, I don't know if I'll be okay with
it. But then
that.
It's like, when do you want to feel happy? Would you rather feel happy later or now? And
now.
Why is the answer not... Now,
I think it's just the same system with releasing the current set of tools, because I think that they want everybody to really rack their brain and figure out everything that you could possibly do with this set of tools. I mean, like,
how does
you want to see some crazy implementation? Go look at Pangea Panga's videos.
Fans have pointed me towards him.
Yeah, that's the guy who got a lot of his tasks and speedrun videos taken down recently, but he's been making Mario Maker levels, and they are just as fucking Kaizo level of difficulty, and they're actually really cool to watch somebody beat them, you know?
Gosh. Yeah. I always get really scared when I'm doing the 100 Mario challenge. So far, I have not had to give up on a single level in the challenge, although your stupid, unlikely companion puzzle, I still don't get it. But I don't want any hints. I'm going to get it someday.
Wait, which part are you stuck at?
I don't know. The P block.
I don't know.
The P block.
Yeah, a lot of people get stuck there. I think it's unintentionally the hardest part of the whole level.
And you tried to clarify it in version 2, but whatever's going on is still flying over my head. And I get really sad when scrolling through the comments, because everyone's like, oh man, this level was so great. And I'm like, I can't wait. It makes me feel like an idiot, but I don't want to know.
I clarified version 2 changed the part right before the P block.
Yeah,
The part right before it was there's a very easy way to like cheese past that part, and I made it a little more difficult to do that. But you can still cheese it, which is kind of annoying because I can't put a ceiling above that. But
don't
whatever.
Tell me if I'm wrong. I just want to give you feedback.
Sure.
I am reading those new little conveyor blocks that you put in version 2 as a hint for the P block puzzle. And I think that's specifically because I am just so desperate to solve this P block puzzle.
You told me not to tell you. I just want you
to know that's how I'm reading the differences between these two versions, even though you just told me it wasn't a hint for the P block puzzle at all, but instead a super easy one that I didn't have any trouble with before that.
No, I mainly released that version 2 to fix that little bit before, but I did some cleaning up on the other stuff because a lot of people were saying that the P block puzzle was just like boggling their mind. They couldn't fucking get it. And so I was like, I'll tweak stuff and clean it up and maybe clarify a little bit. So,
I mean, no pressure. Right. I'm sure when I figured out it's going to feel great. There was one level I did where you had to land between P blocks. If you landed on a P block, it would break the ceiling and a screen full of spinies would come flying down. And it took me like an hour and a half to get through this stupid level. But once I did, I felt amazing. It was like the best sense of payoff since like a Dark Souls game.
I'm not sure if I sent you this level, but I starred one. I don't even remember what it was called, but it was the only puzzle level that I've just stumbled across, just like randomly going through new levels. And there's a very cool implementation of Super Mario World's like shell throwing like physics. Mm-hmm. And it's like this three part sort of almost dungeon where every puzzle has like three mini parts of it where you like do something and immediately it's like, oh shit, I needed that. All right, got to go back and redo it, but also like try a little bit harder to retain that shell while I keep going. It's very cool. I'll send it to you if I haven't sent that to you already.
Okay. I like how you talk about how if you miss something, you have to start over again. And that's also another thing I was talking about earlier, how it's super easy to break these puzzle levels and it just kind of turns into trial and error.
That's the thing that I found really good about this level is you don't have to start over. It's sort of like I needed this to hit this thing to go forward. And then you get to the part where you go forward and you're like, oh, I still need a shell. Maybe I'll go back and grab it. And then you kind of like, you get forward again. You're like, oh, I need two shells. Okay. And then you like, it sort of does this like, wait, not yet. Like the whole level. And you kind of like, there's not like huge backtracking. It's like a very, very like, oh, drop down a level real quick. But
okay.
Yeah, I really like that level. I'll send it to you.
Thanks. I'll check it out. Mm-hmm. How are you enjoying Mario Maker, Matt?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Remember when this conversation started?
Yeah, I know. I feel bad.
Yeah. It was me. You asked me what I was doing, and then I'm just the kid in the back with his hand raised while
no,
the teacher
you're
ignores.
Not. You're like, a beautiful,
you know what? We're not video
star.
Chatting.
Teacher George? Teacher George?
You should vocalize that raised hand, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm
cut
probably
us
like the
off.
Only black. Oh, I took it to the race thing. Well, Super Mario's good.
What was that drop?
I dropped a thing. Sorry.
Okay. I thought you were dropping the mic.
Go, Matt.
Okay, yeah, okay. Yeah. No, it's good. It's good. It's good. That's it. You know.
Nothing. No spooky stories.
When every time I wanted to talk, you know, you guys were talking. I didn't want to interrupt. So
I accidentally dropped a thing. I was trying to get George to shut up.
Mm. There you go.
So Matt, you enjoy playing it with your wife and swapping the controllers every mm-hmm. level, right? Right?
Yeah.
So what sort of no, this is a serious question. Like, what kind of dynamics does that create in terms of what happens when one of you gets stuck?
She passes the controller to me.
What happens when you get stuck?
I don't get stuck.
Oh, okay.
Damn.
I don't
talk
get
about
stuck.
Mic drops.
I'm pretty decent at Mario. I had trouble. The stages I had trouble on was freaking Rubber Ross in his stages. Holy crap.
I haven't played any of those
right.
yet.
And I think I stumbled onto Gerard's one, and there's just one where you have to spin roll on two of those, like, don't you know those things that turn, the worms that turn red after you hit them?
Mm-hmm. Ah, wigglers.
Wigglers. You have to, two of them drop, and I'm assuming you're supposed to spin roll on both of them to get up to whatever platform, I'm guessing. And you have a split second
roll?
To react. Yes, but there's nothing else in the level in the beginning. All you have is this little platform that you start on, and two wigglers drop down in an obvious position that you can spin roll on both of them, and you have to get the timing like just right. And I'm like, there's got to be a hidden block somewhere. This is some bull. This is some bull. But other than that, I mean, it's been good. It's been challenging in the right way. I'll be like, no, I'm going to defeat this level. And
yeah.
You just keep trying and you overcome it, and it's fun. Some of them are, some of those guys are just, they don't know how to create levels, obviously. But most of the time, I've ended up enjoying each level with different mechanics and, you know. Yeah.
Since you know that the uploader had to complete it, you always have a ray of hope.
I always think in the back of my mind, I'm going to reach that level where there's a hidden block somewhere, some hidden way too, who liked it. There's this like slider at the bottom of the screen that you can't see, right? That comes up at a certain time, like 10 seconds after everything spawns, and then you just jump on there, and that's how you complete the level. I'm scared to reach that level, dude.
You were talking about Ross's levels. I watched a couple of the Game Grumps episodes where they played his levels. He revealed that he has one of those in every level. There's like in the first like screen or two, there's like a very, very like specifically hidden thing that you would never stumble across by accident just so he can get to the end of the level to upload it.
Oh my gosh. That's that really mean.
Yeah, they're all beatable according to him. And I've seen a lot of people beat his levels, but
he can't like, beat his own level.
He just like doesn't even bother. He like tests each individual section and then just uses his upload scapegoat.
Wow.
That's really mean, Ross. Why? I guess he just enjoys the rest of us suffering.
Yeah.
He does. He's actually he actually also confirmed that he's a sadist on that show. So
that explains everything.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's funny you mentioned, because George, you were saying like, oh, I want to go back and beat Jimmy's level. Like, I want to go back and defeat Rubber Ross's level. Like, after
open it up in the editor and find the hidden block that activates the roller coaster right to the end of the level.
No, I want to beat it legitimately. I mean, there's no point if you don't want to beat it legit. There's no point. Like, what, you get a little flag next to the level? Like, who cares about that?
I mean, as far as the people on the Miiverse will know, you've done it legit.
Yeah.
And then you can leave a comment saying, it was so easy. I did it backwards. Yeah.
Matt is an honorable Mario maker.
Yeah, I really enjoy the game. It's just hard for me to say, hey, person who, you know, didn't grow up with Mario and generally just loves Mario games, here's a game where, you know, you can play unlimited levels made by people. Some of them might be good, some might be bad. It's hard to recommend for $60. But
yeah,
it's still a good game. Yeah.
Like there's $60 worth of entertainment.
Such a good idea.
But yeah. What you get in the box by itself without ever getting on the internet, it seems kind of below the usual $60 point of
absolutely.
Production.
I think that might be just like sort of Nintendo's new thing with getting so many games online. Like, I would not recommend Splatoon offline. Like, not even close to being worth it just playing the single player. But
also my first day with Splatoon still felt satisfying and exhaustive, and I was like, wow, there's still a lot left to do.
Yeah, no, granted, it's like it's a good game, but it's not a $60 game for that single player mode, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, if you play it online intentionally, you get the $60. My first day with Mario Maker, I was online, I was browsing levels, and I was still like, I don't know how long this is going to last me.
I don't know. I'm taking it slow. I'm not like going super hard and having like 12-hour play sessions, but I'm picking it up every day, you know, making like messing around in level editor, playing some levels, doing a 100 Mario challenge and getting back off. And that's like, I'm feeling satisfied with it so far.
If Nintendo wasn't, you know, greedy little monsters, I would probably upload more videos, but you know. Nintendo loves to copyright everything.
I'm going to see what happens.
Just put borders on it, warp the footage, change the audio, invert the colors.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so good luck, George, earning money on
Thanks.
That video.
I'll try. Yeah. I'm sure it'll be fine.
I'm going to review all camera. Yep.
Sincerely, though, with Mario Maker, I find that I've heard a lot of the claims come from the audio, so don't have game audio on in your review, and yes, shrink the footage and put a border around it.
Really?
Maybe even put borders that go like a little bit over the corners of the footage, and don't put any cutscene related stuff. So like end of a 100 Mario challenge or something. That should keep you safe for the most part, I believe.
That's ridiculous, though.
Wow.
It's like safety measures. I've seen people upload videos that aren't getting claimed, so I don't know.
Huh, so I guess I'm just going to have a like blurry little background for all of the stuff. And I'm really surprised like that you're saying this, because usually with gameplay footage you don't have to worry about anything, because no one's gameplay is going to look the same as anyone else's. You can't match up the frames.
I mean, I didn't get my Nintendo World Championships video claimed, and that's straight ripped from a Nintendo stream. So
wow.
but
you're under the TOVG umbrella, I think. Yeah,
I'm actually not my channel's not partnered.
The individual channel,
maybe at your feet,
my channel's not actually even partnered with the network, so I'm like, right. I'm a sitting duck. But yeah, I mean, like literally, if you shrink the footage a little bit and put a border, that covers most of your bases. But cutscene stuff and game audio, I feel, is like the worst stuff. Like Splatoon videos won't get claimed if you don't include that little score screen afterwards.
You can just upload
your that's where they get you.
God,
it's kind of annoying. Yeah. Very annoying, actually.
Be careful, George. Anyway, the Nintendo Shrek is waiting in the corner.
Nintendo Shrek, what?
The Nintendo Shrek is waiting for you to upload that video.
Speaking of the Nintendo Shrek, this is the longest we've ever gone before the break.
I was about to say, I'll let us think on that Nintendo Shrek.
Yeah.
While we have a little bit of rest and rejuvenation.
Yeah.
Just try to figure
out. Don't close your eyes.
I'm visualizing the Nintendo Shrek right now. And
new from Angry Birds Go, Jenga. Pirate pig attack. Yar. They're building our ship out of Jenga. Jenga blocks to keep birds away. Aye, matey. They race and they speed in their go-karts on the way to wreck the pig's day. They'll crash that ship today. Jenga blocks sink into the bay. Pigs watch your back or jump the track. It's a pirate pig attack. So watch your pigs back. They turn down the tracks. It's a pirate pig attack.
We're gonna burst through the news.
Oh. And welcome.
Yeah, well, hello and welcome to the news sprint. very first stride, we got Konami rumoring to cease their productions on AAA games entirely except for PES, which is a weird story based on rumors that was reported on a French site. Eurogamer supposedly confirmed them. However, Konami has since gone on to deny these rumors, with a representative saying, "I can promise you that we're definitely not leaving Metal Gear behind or anything like that. I know some blogs were claiming online this morning, but I'm not really sure where they'd be getting that from. We're still working on console games and franchises such as Metal Gear, Silent Hill, Castlevania, PES, and all the rest."
Yep.
Which I don't know, like, how I don't know who to trust anymore, because Konami definitely doesn't have any of that on their schedule except for PES. And it's not that surprising of a news story in the first place. It was just kind of like a nail in a coffin that already exists.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know it was a rumor. I thought they came out and said they're halting all AAA and they're focusing on mobile.
And that's another thing why it's hard to believe the guy saying, no, this is just a rumor, we're still working on these franchises. Because earlier this year, the new president of Konami was saying that their focus from now on is going to be 100% mobile. I think that was the exact quote, although it's not entirely true, because they still had some console PES and Yu-Gi-Oh games coming out. But even then, like those franchises aren't exactly... Like, PES makes a lot of money in Japan and Europe, but they aren't like worldwide blockbusters that everyone gets all hyped up for.
Snake pachinko machines.
Oh God! Yeah.
I would hope.
Wouldn't they?
Yeah.
I would really hope that pachinko machine is just a cardboard box.
It's really
That's pretty good.
That I kind of like the idea of playing with this idea, because there's so many stupid, wacky ways they could pull it off. But the idea itself is just like so, it's like watching a balloon that you really liked as a kid deflate and die over the course of a day. But yeah, the supposed rumor is from a French site called Gameblog. Eurogamer has since quote unquote confirmed it by saying Eurogamer understands both reports to be true. And that also came a day after news was revealed that the Fox Engine lead quit Konami because they weren't using the Fox Engine on anything else again. Supposedly, PES16 uses it, but you can't really tell with that game. And they've spent a lot of time and money making this very well-optimized game for this very fast engine, and now they're just kind of throwing away all that effort. And this also comes after further news that Metal Gear Solid 5 is going to have to make a profit on an $80 million production cost, which it might not. I mean, we'll have to see as time goes on, even though it
should be a pretty popular game. It's also number 5 in kind of a very niche series. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would say don't take news like this super duper seriously, but at the same time, much like when I was breaking news like this earlier, the circumstances seem to suggest that it is true. We got more, another little side note in the past 2 weeks of the fuck Konami Daily News Bulletin is right. The horror manga artist, Jun Ito was apparently also working on Silent Hills before it was canceled. This news comes to us by ways of Guillermo del Toro's Twitter account, who said it himself, Junji Ito, undisputed master of horror in Japan and our collaborator in Silent Hills, was scheduled to be working on this thing that got canceled, which is also another thing to be sad about.
Yeah, first of all, I don't like disturbing things for the most part. I've never played a Silent Hills game or a Silent Hill game, but upon looking at this guy's art,
it looks pretty spooky.
It's pretty fucked up in a lot of ways, and he probably would have been a valuable asset to the series.
Dude, I'm surprised. Look at that shark bug, dude. There's a shark, and then bug is growing out of the bottom of it.
So that's from the horror series Gaio, which sees Okinawa invaded by mutant killer fish with metal legs as a holdover from World. It sounds like a pretty campy concept, but the illustrations are like really, really nightmare
they're
quality
very disturbing.
Stuff. Yes. And I'm also like, I don't know. I've never really actually heard of this guy until now, which probably makes me a stupid babby because I don't know. I'm not super into the animus and the mangoes.
Well, like, I think that's just a thing where it's like if you know if you're not into Nintendo, then you may not know like Samus's backstory or like you may not know like some enemies from Metroid or something. Like, I'm not into manga pretty much at all. So, and I'm not into most horror stuff, especially disturbing stuff. So, like, it's no wonder that like I haven't heard of him. You haven't heard of him, but looking at his work, he's very talented. And
the people who do know of him are like devastated by this news. It was really big news that day. Which kind of makes me wonder, though, why they didn't publicize his name earlier. I guess Kojima, Del Toro, and Norman Reedus were more bankable terms in the West, but...
Yeah, definitely.
But even then, it seems like a weird place for this very popular artist's name to be coming out of from Guillermo Del Toro's Twitter account months after the fact. Anyways, like
what
I said,
we're
yeah, I know. We're blistering through this though. Mm-hmm. We got a little bit about the new Hitman, which is have you guys heard of this thing? Have you guys played the previous Hitman games?
No, never played any
old,
of them.
Like old ones, and they were kind of rough for me. I think, was it 360? I think it was 360 days. So
you might be thinking of Blood Money.
Yes.
Which is supposedly the series' peak. And it was also the only one in a very long time up until Absolution 3 years ago, I want to say. Well, anyways, they're making a new one, and they're going for another weird... very, very 2015 kind of release model where they have a game coming out in chunks of DLC at a time that will eventually lead up to a $60 permanent season pass that is also the cost of the base game by itself, but it will be initially be launching for $30 with what they're calling 3 locations and 6 missions. And I'm wondering how... the nomenclature really describes how this game is designed around that. Like, you could have kind of the way Metal Gear Solid 5. Metal Gear Solid 5 actually takes a lot of inspiration, I feel, from Hitman games because you have big sandbox maps and individual missions within those,
where a clockwork of AI scripts run a routine that you can throw a wrench into while trying to complete specific objectives, which is a lot like the old Hitman games. They just took place in tunnels instead of big blobby sandbox maps. So when they say three locations, I'm wondering, are they talking about big blobby sandbox maps or just like a asset set for tunnel style levels like in the older games?
Yeah, that's a very big distinction between a worthless $35 game and a very worth it $35 game.
Right. And even then, like, you got the difference between six fully fleshed out levels and fully fleshed out individual level designs versus six like GTA style missions in three mini GTA maps. It would be kind of weird. I can't really say that neither of them don't sound like $30 to me, considering how like Ground Zeroes felt fine to me at $30, and it was I think four like really long, hour long Hitman style missions all in the same sandbox map.
Yeah, I was not one of the people who had a problem with Ground Zeroes. I thought I don't know. I mean, I don't think any game should be priced $60. That's just me personally. I think dropping that price down across the board would be beneficial to everybody. But I think that at relative pricing, I don't think that it was a big deal, in my opinion. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know about Hitman. But, like, what I'm saying is if these are short, like, GoldenEye 64 length levels, then, God, mind you, I've never played a Hitman game, but I would not pay $35 for that game.
They tend to have really good replayability, though. There are lots of different routes through Hitman levels.
Yeah. So they're going the route because a lot of people don't finish their games anyway to sell them a cheaper, you know, entry, and so they can, you know, at least play through it, and if they want to continue, they buy the next part, basically.
It seems like It's so weird to say pay demo again, because that's also a lot of the complaints that you heard about Ground Zeroes, which I don't necessarily agree with after playing it. Like, I got a good solid 11 hours the first few nights out of Ground Zeroes, and now I'm playing it again and having a blast with it all over again. So that was $30, and that felt about right to me. But it was still a kind of a risky move from their part, and also folded into how you're seeing Splatoon releasing, and to a lesser extent also like Witcher 3 coming out with a bunch of DLC add-ons during the first 6 weeks after launch. But yeah, this is
it's interesting.
A new normal. So far, I'm okay with it because there hasn't really been a bad example that I've played. I'm sure there have been bad examples, but I guess I've managed to steer clear of those.
Mm-hmm.
Of like this whole partial launch concept, but yeah, it's interesting times. I'm wondering how long this thing's going to stick around.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it has potential to be bad, but I have not experienced it in a bad way. But I mean, like, at the same time, I know people who don't like Splatoon's way of going about it. They think that it was very limiting and very like it turned them off to the game, whereas I thought it turned me onto the game.
I think it's kind of unfortunate that a player's experience can vary so much by what date they get into it. Because I imagine I probably would not be enjoying Splatoon as much as I did if I bought it on day one, where there was simply less Splatoon to enjoy.
I don't know. I like that limitation and being able to like, oh, I need to try out all my options because there's like
not many options.
Like in Street Fighter 4, I have not played probably 90% of that roster. But if they released, you know, two characters a week, I'd probably have tried out all of them, if that makes sense.
Huh. That's how Killer Instinct launched, too, didn't it?
Yeah, and that's going pretty well for them as far as I know.
Yeah, I haven't heard a lot of complaints about that one. Matt, you're into Killer Instinct, right?
No, because I have Xbox.
Because we played it that one time, and you're the Xbox guy, right.
Right.
But that's the only game on Xbox One.
You see, I was going to land that joke, but you know what, Jimmy? You beat me to it.
It also
you
has beat
sorry,
me
dude.
To it, man.
Sorry.
I played a bit of it. Man, I do not get the combos for that. Like, it's super easy to get in a combo, but I'm assuming it's hard to like master being able to break it and stuff like that. They have seasons as well. It's a really crazy system, and you have to pay a little bit money to unlock more characters. You get like a free character every week, I think. Every week.
And they rotate them in and out.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, like League of Legends where they rotate.
Right. You know. Yeah.
Except it's only one character that you have to play. So you obviously, when you go online, you're playing another one of the same character. You know exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, this guy has not been playing just like you. He just going to mash that. He's just going to... Basically, what I do is just I rotate the analog stick like over and over again, and then combos just stream out, dude. Combo! Combo! Breaker! And
it's kind of interesting to think of this character rotation thing as a balancing force, keeping players on a more even field by making them play with something they're unfamiliar with.
Yeah. Interesting.
Anyways, we've talked a lot about price, the value of things and what they may be worth, right, while also not really knowing how expensive a lot of things are behind the scenes, which sounds a lot like the conversations surrounding the SAG-AFTRA voice actor strike.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is going to be really hard to talk about. So basically, 2 weeks ago, a little controversy... I don't know if it's like little, I feel like this might be more important than it feels like when you read about it, because game voice acting is important, but it's also hard to notice sometimes because it's just like six guys.
I mean, okay, here's the deal. I watched a couple videos on it. I listened to podcasts that talked about it. I'd say check out Jim Sterling's video about it if you want to sort of see. I'm talking to the viewers. I think George, you already said you already told me that you watched that video, but Jim Sterling did a good video on this. It's the Screen Actors Guild strike. I think the video is called Performance Matters, which is the hashtag that they're using,
which was reading me out too, because I thought they were talking about frame rates.
Yeah, I thought that too. It was a very weird choice of words for the gaming industry, but I get it. It's a catchy hashtag. But yeah, I don't know much about acting. I don't know much about voice acting for sure. It's...
What happened?
After watching Jim Sterling's video, I can... My like, completely hands-off opinion from knowing pretty much nothing else about it is, yeah, I sort of stand with the voice actors that want to get paid for doing good work. Because,
Oh, sorry.
No, that's
okay, I was just kind of...
What's the story?
The story. I was
right.
Going to explain the story. The story is that they need to SAG-AFTRA wants to negotiate for some kind of new industry standard regarding back end bonuses, and the idea for this, it only applies to a minority of games, but the idea is that the voice actor would take a lower performance fee for a percentage of gross revenue if the game breaks 2 million units sold, which kind of makes a lot of sense to me, because breaking 2 million units is something not a lot of games do. Right. Only a minority of AAA games that have big budgets to begin with make that many copies sold. And at the same time, it also kind of prevents the Cousin Roman situation from back in 2008, where the voice actor got mad that he later on found out, I guess he didn't know what Grand Theft Auto is at the time, but later on found out that he was voice acting for this like 14 million unit selling blockbuster, but got paid what he was used to working for something that might sell like 40,000 units.
Right.
And basically wanted royalties that he wasn't getting. And I don't know, like, I don't want to get into the judgment call for that, but I just do want to say that when you have a budget that high, a little like 2% bonus for the people who make that game worthwhile is probably not that big of a drop in the game's budget.
Yeah.
It seems like from the Game Informer articles I've been reading about it or skimming, it seems like they're framing these demands as not being that ridiculous, but apparently the other forces at play don't want to negotiate, and so a lot of voice actors were voting to strike last week, which would be really interesting. Because when actors in TV and film go on strike, you can tell there will be a little period of production afterwards that'll seem a lot more weirder and creative than the rest because they have to deal with that new limitation and then Dr. Horrible happens. Right. But for video games, the production cycle is so much longer and actors are involved, that they're still greatly involved, but to a lesser extent in the overall production, that I don't know if you'd be able to really notice the difference of a short strike versus a more long-term one.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Also, before we move it too far past that, I just want to make this joke that I can't really find a setup for, but wouldn't the video game voice actor strike just be Nolan North sitting in his house not doing anything? Hey, because he's in every game and he plays every character.
It's true, though.
Good joke, Jimmy.
Oh.
He does literally, he's like in like fucking 100,000 games.
They're replacing Hollywood star actor Donald Dinkelder. What was his name? This is
Peter Dinklage.
This is how little Donald I know Dinkelder? About things that aren't video games.
All right, there's the podcast title.
It's Donald Dinkelder.
Yeah, amazing.
It's because I was thinking of election news. That's all I do. I just read election news, watch Rick and Morty, and play video games.
Real talk, Morty. Though, if Peter Dinklage ran for president, I'd vote for him over Trump.
What about these nuts?
Yeah, he's going to have to run against Trump.
These nuts.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to say something on the voice acting. I would have to agree with the union because, I mean, as long as they're not being greedy, obviously. But, like, because what if Soma sold very well? Right. Mm-hmm. I would think that the voice actors that were on there should get a little bonus. Why?
A bonus
because
for selling well.
The reason why I love that game so much is because of the delivery of the voice actors.
So if the game sells well. Oh, sorry. I was God damn it, I'm doing it again. If a game with good voice acting sells well, it's because the voice acting's probably doing a part in selling the game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It would be hard to think of that game without voice acting or good voice acting. Because if the delivery was bad, then the game probably wouldn't have sold well. People wouldn't have heard it on the stream and be like, oh, wow, hold up. Wait a minute. What? This horror game is is a little bit more than just some regular indie horror.
This horror game is a more game.
Oh. There's more the horror.
Oh man. Okay. Yeah. So I can't follow up from that. I can't follow up from that. It's I definitely in those cases I would definitely like them to get a little bonus, a little ching ching on
also
the side.
Also, there's the fact that since these bonuses are applying to games that hit that 2 million unit mark, it's only applying to the games that sell really well and are thus easier to pick on.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. So that's the news.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been real. I'm sorry we missed last week, but that just meant that we had more fun to catch up on this week.
Yeah, that was partially on my end because of scheduling, but go watch the thing that I sunk 20 to 30 hours of editing into. Mm. Go watch Defend
Where
It.
Where could we find your thing?
Well, that one's actually not on my channel, but that's the youtube.com/thatonevideogamer is you'll find the new episode of Defend It, which I
who did the animation
and edited. Well, the you mean like the backgrounds and the intro and everything?
Yeah.
That was Micah Frar, who is the pixel art animator for JonTron's assets.
Ah, I see it.
Yeah, he does very good work.
Oh yeah, he does.
But I did all the editing, directing, green screen work.
Nice.
All those guys. But I mean, there's like five or six of us that worked on it. Shout outs to all those guys. But yeah, it really came out great. Really happy with it. You can go watch that. That's why you didn't get a podcast last week.
So this is Dodger's big appearance, right? It's just sharing the office, making something of that.
Also Jesse Cox.
Really?
As the judge.
I'm flipping through it now. There's so many beards to differentiate.
They all look the same.
Hey, man.
Oh.
I didn't mean it in a mean way. Everyone just has beards.
But yeah, you can find my actual stuff. I did a video on Rivals of Aether that I yammered on about for 10 minutes earlier. YouTube.com/SunderGamer or SunderCR on Twitter.
Yay!
Hey, Matt, where we can find
YouTube. YouTube.com/TheBush. I mean, Matt Visual.
A lot of people are confused about the bush.
It's okay.
I say let
they don't
them
know
George,
about
where
the
we,
bush.
Where can we
they
find
don't
you?
Need to know about the bush.
YouTube.com/BunnyHopShow.
Woo!
Yeah.
He also has a bush. Yeah.
You don't know.
Maybe I've been to your house. Be sure to rate us
5 stars on iTunes. We'll see you next time, everybody. Goodbye.
It'll be a mystery.
Goodbye.
It is a mystery.
No, it's never a mystery to me, George.
Goodbye.
Bye, I guess.
You can just cut it right in there.
The weirdest exit ever.
Yeah.
Goodbye.